Well, hello, and welcome to Scribes with Jacqueline Michard. This is a show about writing for writers and readers as well, and we're delighted and proud that it is sponsored by Writer's Digest, the best resource for writers and writing that probably exists on the earth. So we're very happy that Writer's Digest has sponsored this show and partnered with us. Today, I'm talking with a writer who's very close to my own heart and whose book is just a wonderful story. It is being published by Merit Press, it has been published by Merit Press, which is the small young adult publisher, small literary young adult publisher, of which I am the curator and editor-in-chief. And it was just maybe about 6 months or 9 months ago that we came across a manuscript that just bewitched both my assistant and I, called Beneath Wandering Stars. And we found out more about the manuscript and read it and made an offer, and we were so happy that Ashley Cowles accepted our offer and we were able to publish this wonderful story that is about everything, but we'll talk about that. Ashley, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jackie. I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we love this book, and readers love this book, and it is a story about, as I said, it's about everything. It's about faith. It's about art. It's about the bonds between family, and it's about a very specific sector of teenagers growing up in military life, because their parents are involved in military life, and then in this situation, the next generation, the younger generation, also is involved with the military. Tell us about the story. Tell us about the story and about, we'll talk about the pilgrimage later on, but tell us about who the people are in the book.
Sure. So Beneath Wandering Stars, it's about a 17-year-old girl named Gabby who has grown up in a military family. So she's lived on Army posts around the U.S. and now in Germany. And her older brother, Lucas, has followed in their father's footsteps. So he's joined the Army as well. And he's seriously injured during a deployment to Afghanistan. So back in Germany, Gabby learns about that, and she also discovers that one of her brother's final wishes is to walk the Camino de Santiago across northern Spain, and that's a medieval pilgrimage route that's still walked today by thousands of people. But she has to walk it with her brother's best friend, Seth, who is also a young soldier and someone Gabby hasn't ever really gotten along with. So they embark on this journey together on behalf of Lucas.
And he can't do it himself. I know you said he was seriously injured, but he also he's confined to a wheelchair, correct?
Yes. Well, it starts out he's in a coma, and
yes.
So there's a letter with his final wish about the pilgrimage.
Okay. So she's in a situation of doing something that she doesn't want to do, but for someone who she loves very much, but also being put together, as so many great love stories start, with someone she absolutely cannot stand, right?
Yes, exactly. Seth and her have some history, and they're just kind of a clash of personalities, but it's a story of one of those, you know, how journeys tend to either make relationships or break relationships, if anyone's ever traveled, you know, with just one particular person. And that's, you know, that's what ends up happening in this story.
And why do you think that is? That if there is something, some of the best conversations I've ever had with my teenagers or my older children have been when both of us are facing ahead in the seats of a car, or when we're walking through a place where it seems we have to concentrate a little bit on the terrain, somehow the extraneous parts of life or the parts of life that we find so absorbing on a day-to-day basis are stripped away. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I think that's definitely true, that, you know, travel, whether it's walking or in some other form, it really does break us out of our normal everyday routines. And just, I always describe the Camino de Santiago, which I walked before writing this book, as it just makes you see. You slow down, you notice things, and you notice the people that you meet along the way and that you have the opportunity to talk with. I think there is something about travel that just breaks down barriers and just helps us focus on what's important, and just helps us really live in the present moment.
And you also have to depend, not to a huge degree, but in some ways you depend on the relationships that you make that are fleeting with strangers.
Yes, that's very true. And Gabby and Seth definitely experienced that. There's a long tradition of hospitality along the Camino de Santiago, and people who, there's hostels that are run by volunteers to host the pilgrims, and people may invite pilgrims into their homes to stay. And so that is something that Gabby and Seth get to experience. That's pretty countercultural for them, this idea of trusting strangers and relying on strangers, just being open to that kind of hospitality.
That's definitely not an American tradition. When I've traveled in other countries, when I've traveled in Italy, when I've traveled even in Ireland, there's much more. At first you think, oh, people are inviting me into tea. Does that mean they're going to kill me? usually they're literally inviting you into tea. When they ask how you are, they really want to know how you are, and they want to discuss where you've come from, and they're interested in your background, and in a way that is definitely proves to Americans that we need to be citizens of the world. If we didn't know that already, we should know that now.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually met a fellow pilgrim along the Camino, who, after he walked that route, came to the United States and walked across the United States. He may have been expecting something very similar, and he found Americans to be very, very friendly and warm.
Good.
But I think the nature of opening doors and, letting a stranger stay with you, that wasn't quite the same experience. But I don't think we also don't have a tradition like the Camino, where it's been going on for thousands of years.
Well, how did you, before we talk more about Gabby and her story, how did you come to take that walk yourself, and also, and it's not a stroll either, to take that walk and to have that experience on your own, and how was it inspirational to you?
Well, it started with, as a college student, studied abroad in Spain, and I was a history major, and I took a class, actually, that was all about the Camino, and so every weekend, our teacher, there was only about 8 of us in the class, so we'd load up in a minivan and drive up to different spots along the route that had a historical significance. So that was my initial exposure to it, and I just found it really fascinating and said, one day I'm going to come back and walk this route. So I was able to do that in 2011. And I didn't walk the entire thing. I did about the last 200 kilometers.
That's all.
One day I would love to go back and walk it from the beginning.
What is it like in terms of the challenges of the actual physical trek?
Well, it is a route that just about anybody who's, relatively mobile and fit could walk. There are people walking it in their 80s. There were people who brought their little kids. It's not the most – there are a few challenging days. But it is something that, anybody could work up to, or most people could work up to. And it's a little different because there's so much culture along the way. So you're not ever in, very remote places for very long. There's always a village, bars and wine bars and hostels to stay in, not too many miles in the future. So, there's a lot of great food to be had along the way as well. So there's some challenging parts to the trek, But there's a lot of great culture and cuisine as well.
Can you tell the listeners just a smidgen of the history behind it and how people first began to make this pilgrimage?
Sure. So it's believed to be the resting place of the Apostle St. James. So Santiago de Compostela, where the pilgrimage route ends, there's a huge cathedral there, and it's believed to house the remains of St. James. And that's actually partly how I came up with the name Beneath Wandering Stars, because there's an old legend about a hermit who lived out in the wilderness, and he saw this star that was acting very, very strange, and it was wandering across the sky. And so he had the local bishop come out, and they went to the spot, to the field, where they believed the star was behaving rather strangely, and came across three graves and believed that there was a lot of legends about St. James being buried somewhere in the area with his two disciples, and so they decided to build a cathedral on top of that site.
Okay.
So that's the medieval history as far as why people all over Europe would walk from all different countries.
And not all of them are Catholics. Not all of them are doing this strictly as a religious pilgrimage.
Definitely not today. Today it's so interesting how just eclectic the pilgrims are. I think most people still will use the name pilgrim just for its tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on my journey, I met people walking it for all different reasons. You know, people who are religious, people who are secular, people who were just looking for some time to have for introspection and just trying to figure out the next step of their life. And some people just thought it was a really great trek and an interesting cultural experience. So definitely a lot of different motives today.
So about the story, this is one of the, as a writer myself, I particularly appreciate this book. It is one of the most beautifully written books that I've ever, certainly that I've ever published, and one of the most beautifully written books I've ever read. And I wondered, you interweaved the story of Gabby's background as a so-called army brat into the story. How did you decide to make her part of that rather unique culture? Is that part of your own experience?
Yes, it is. So I, my father was in the United States Army, and so the first 18 years of my life were spent, you know, very similar to Gabby, moving around every 3 years or less, going to a lot of different schools, and I also spent my high school years overseas on a post in Europe. And that just really left this imprint on me and gave me my love for Europe, my love for history, for different cultures. So it was a huge, huge part of the inspiration for the story. And I just really, you know, I actually it was the reason I decided to write young adult literature. I wanted to write a young adult story, and I was trying to think of the particular young adult story I had to tell. And I thought, well, you know, I haven't really seen this perspective showcased in young adult literature, but it's one that I know, you know, thousands if not millions of people have experienced, and just a really unique way to grow up with some hardships, but also some tremendous benefits and opportunities, just an exposure to all different kinds of cultures, different kinds of people. I think it's the military is one of the most diverse groups of people, communities in the United States, and I just thought that was normal. It wasn't until I left and graduated from high school and realized that the rest of life isn't, we don't always live in such diversity. So I just really wanted to share that perspective.
And you touched on the fact that there are hardships involved in it. I know that all teenagers. Part of the reason that I love young adult literature is because it's written by people who really feel that they're normal in their lives is to feel as though they're space aliens. You know, they've been thrust into a universe that's peopled by strange, like by their parents, these strange doughy creatures, and by sort of hostile creatures from other situations. And but your character and you, I mean, we'll talk about your character now, is in a situation that really is unique in that she is forced to in real life adapt to situations that are beyond the normal teenage angst. She has challenges, enormous challenges, particularly with her brother's injury, that are beyond the experience of most teenagers.
Yes, that is very true. And I think it is interesting when I talk with other, you know, military brats, and I should explain that that's a term of endearment. Most of us, you know, adopt
right.
it and claim it. That is, you know, one of the things many of us will say is that we didn't know that these hardships were really hardships until after the fact. It was so normal to have to move around. And yes, you may have complained about it or had some resentment about it, but it was normal life. And so I do think that's one of the, yeah, maybe the realistic things about Gabby is that she is responding to this very tragic, difficult situation. But in her community, she knows that there are other people experiencing very similar things. And in the beginning of her story, her father actually has to go deal with another group of families. He's a chaplain assistant, so he has to, you know, comfort another group of families who are experiencing a very tragic loss. And so, you know, Gabby is not perfect. She's definitely not always the most mature, at least at the beginning of her story, but she does eventually, you know, rise to the occasion, and I think has a lot of the traits that military kids have when it comes to this perseverance and resilience in the face of you know, big challenges that most teens don't experience.
How did you inhabit that as a writer? How did you inhabit that teenage voice?
Oh, I was surprised at how naturally it came. I think maybe because I was writing about a subculture and an experience I was so familiar with. And I don't know, for some reason, those 4 years that I lived in Germany, just they were just so monumental in shaping the person that I became. And so those memories are still so crystal clear and so strong, and they feel like yesterday, that it was just really easy to go back to all those emotions and, the conflicting emotions and, it just came out.
Sometimes people say that, young adult writers say that if you acknowledge the fact that none of us ever really matures too much more emotionally beyond that 16 or 17 year old self in some very key ways, it becomes a lot easier to get access to that voice. And I know that you have another life from being a writer. You're a teacher, and so you're involved on a daily basis with people who are with adolescent people. What do you find, those are also your readers, what do you find interesting or beguiling about teenagers, the people that most adults say that they would most like to avoid?
Yes, well, I teach high school, and I teach high school literature, and I think, teenagers are great. I love teaching them, or just being able to have conversations with them. It doesn't necessarily even feel like teaching, like from this top-down approach most of the time. We have conversations about great works of literature. And one of the, I whenever people tell me or I read things or hear things about, you know, certain themes being too deep for adolescents or too complex, or they're not mature enough to think about those big questions yet. I'm just so thankful to have, you know, empirical evidence and experience working with this age group, because I've been able to discuss some of the most complex, difficult texts in literature, and their insights never cease to amaze me. They do ask big questions, and they're curious, and they are ready to dive deep. So I think sometimes adults, we don't give them enough credit.
No, we could definitely sell them short. And it's one of the things that I find most, well, two things. One of, you know, we know that young adult literature may be the only segment or sector of all of literature that is actually growing. People say that when I go to conferences and so forth and I speak about young adult literature, people say, well, how do you get teens to read? Well, you know, in my experience, they're reading. They're reaching out for that sort of portable fantasy and that way to go deeply into an experience that you just don't get from other kinds of media. If they've even been readers as children to a cursory degree, that seems to be something that they continue to enjoy as adolescents.
Yes. Yeah, and one thing I often say to my students is, you know, imagination and empathy, like, these are humanities, these are human beings, are superpowers. And I think that is what we get from reading that we don't always get from other media sources, that ability to, with our minds, imagine what it would be like to be different from who we actually are. And it does. It builds empathy, it builds compassion, and makes us hopefully more humane. And I think teens are still reading because they're drawn to those things.
Let's talk a little bit about the writing and publishing process. Another thing that I hear all the time, and I am just really, I really want to push back against this, is that you'll never get a book published. You know, that people are writing, and there's just no way that writing is ever going to reach the reader. How did you find Merit Press, and how did you decide to go about the process of bringing this book to the world?
Well, it was a journey and a long journey. I wrote several, you know, other manuscripts before Beneath Wandering Stars, and even this, I had, you know, kind of several military brat stories that didn't quite work out before this one really just brought everything together that needed to be there. So I started with writing groups and going to writing conferences and just learning as much about the industry as I could. I did work with actually two literary agents, and it didn't quite work out on this particular project, but that experience kind of gave me some confidence that I just had to kind of keep at it, and eventually the right door would open. And I was actually, I think I just found Merit Press through Google, probably, you know, looking up contemporary publishers of contemporary young adult fiction. And when I read the description of the kinds of books Merit publishes, I thought, yes, this is exactly where this story belongs.
Yes, we are the best. I mean, just, you know, without question.
Well, just the idea that Merit seeks to publish stories that have longevity and that have a certain quality, you know, maybe a timeless quality or something that can straddle decades, generations, not necessarily just be for that current passing fad, but have a quality to them that makes them, just a little bit more timeless. So I really loved that vision and thought, yes, I definitely want to pitch to this publisher.
So for the writers out there, what do you need to be thinking about with your manuscript before you approach a publisher?
I mean, what kind
of shape? Obviously, you want it to be in excellent shape, but what do you? What words of wisdom would you give to other writers out there about having the best possible manuscript to present to a publisher before you ever approach the publisher?
Yeah, I think one of a very common mistake that many writers make, and myself included, is to pitch a project too early. In our mind, you know, we finish the draft, we go through maybe a round of edits, maybe we have a close friend or just someone we trust read it and think it's ready. But usually you've been too long, you're not able to see it from just a more objective perspective. And so oftentimes, you know, you can kind of have your list of dream agents and publishers and maybe send that letter a little bit too soon. And so, you know, I experienced that myself with earlier projects, and I've just found that finding a community of writers, I know a lot of writers say this, but it is so true that it can be helpful to just find other people who are on a similar stage. You know, they're on a similar stage of the journey, and if you can get feedback, you can enter contests that, you know, if nothing else, they give you really objective feedback because you usually don't know the people who are judging the manuscript, and, you know, just getting as many eyes on the work as possible before submitting to agents or publishers is definitely something I'd recommend.
Well, good. That cannot be overstated. It's something that I also couldn't believe more, is that there's no such thing as too much preparation when you're talking about stakes this high, because sometimes you're only going to get the one chance to approach that publisher, and you want to make your best possible shot. It's like an interview for a great job. Let me ask you something that we always ask on Scribes, and that is two things. Who are your go-to writers? Who do you love to read, either living or dead, or just some of your favorite books, maybe two or three? And then I'm going to ask you what your favorite word is.
Okay.
Well, so first of all, what are some of the books that have been comforting, inspirational, that are hallmarks in your reader's life?
Oh, there's so many. But I would say
from
childhood, Anna Green Gables, Little House on the Prairie, Island of the Blue Dolphins. I loved historical fiction as a child. And more recently, with young adult, I don't know if this would be considered young adult, but Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury is one of my favorite stories, a coming-of-age tale. And I also love Jennifer Donnelly, her historical work, A Northern Light, and Melina Marchetta, who's an amazing Australian author. She wrote the Prince Award-winning novel, Jellicoe Road. So those are definitely some of the authors I admire.
They're very classy. Ray Bradbury was my mentor. I
really?
Knew Ray for 37 years and sent books to him and visited him in Los Angeles. And he was a lovely, generous guy. And I don't write fantasy or the supernatural fiction too much, but I think that the evident humanity of all the characters, people like to say that The Martian Chronicles was really a story of growing up in Winnetka, Illinois, for Ray Bradbury. So, And what's your favorite word?
I would say...
Or one of your favorites.
One of my favorites, and maybe related to Beneath Wandering Stars, I love the word resilient or resilience to describe just kids like Gabby and Seth, military kids, and just what it takes to walk a road like the Camino, that perseverance and tenacity. I just love that personality trait, and it's a great word.
Well, thank you, Ashley. The half hour has flown by. Thank you so much for being part of this radio broadcast. And look for Ashley's wonderful book, Beneath Wandering Stars. And from talking to her earlier, I know it's the first of many to come. So we'll be in touch. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Jackie.